Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev writes, Lord of the universe, I want to propose a deal. We have many sins. You have much forgiveness. Let us exchange our sins for your forgiveness. And if you should say that this is not a fair exchange, then my reply is, if we had no sins, what would you do with your forgiveness? Welcome to The Good Word. We continue our series on the book of Exodus. I am your host, Chiagua Heiss, and I am joined by my conversation partners, Dr. Matilda Fry, Dr. Jody Washburn. Friends, we are here at the text of Exodus 32, where we find a radical interruption. I think we ended last episode talking about how there is a lot of anticipation coming from the previous chapters. Will the people live according to the law written by the finger of God? Will they build the sanctuary? Well, no, that doesn't happen in chapter 32. Something else happens. So what do you see here in the text, friends, that is meaningful to you in regards to the human condition? The first question I have in my study guide tries to evoke those moods and sensibilities. I ask there, why do the people make a calf, a golden calf? What does this say about how fear and impatience can cause us to recreate false security from our past, even if it enslaved us?
I really believe, and I have to emphasize when I talk about this passage, that we have to recognize these are real human ways of reaction that come out here. If we don't see that and see just they reacted in such a terrible, rebellious way, then we do not recognize our human condition.
Yep, 100%.
This man, Moses, cannot survive for 40 days on this mountain. That's a very normal way of thinking. Mm-hmm. If you and I were in that place, mm-hmm. we would definitely recognize that. Mm-hmm. And so we need to point it out when we speak or read this passage.
Yeah. So what you're saying, Matilda, is that we would build a golden calf.
We'll build a golden calf.
No, I love this. I think you're right. And that's sort of why I sprinkled my introductory remarks with the human condition. This is so human. It's such a human text, right?
Yes.
And I mean, this is why, at least to me, and I'm sure this is why we're around this table and teaching together at this institution, what makes the Bible so significant, right, is because it does make room for these deep human situations that depict them in such an interesting and nuanced way. What do we do when we're experiencing insecurity, mm-hmm. when we are experiencing a complete lack of control over our environment and circumstances? I mean, even if you go beyond religious literature, it's not hard. It takes you 30 seconds to find the answer to that. We all reach for the one thing we all desire, which is control. Mm-hmm. We want to have some agency over the situation.
We try to control. We need to have a certain kind of safety and protection. And that's all about that. Mm-hmm. And so basically, Pharaoh's empire gets to be implemented here in the middle of the desert one more time.
Interesting. Why, though? Do you feel like this is sort of, as I phrase my question here in the beginning, is it just finding security in that which is known to us? Because they do build something. I mean, I have a quote here from Sarna, right? The first quote there. Hebrew, Egel is a young ox or bull, and throughout the Near East, the bull was a symbol of lordship, leadership, strength, vital energy, fertility. As such, it was either defined in worship or employed in representation of divinity. Often the bull or some other animal served as a pedestal on which the god stood. Mm-hmm. And Aaron seems to have followed contemporary artistic convention. The young bull would have been the pedestal upon which the invisible god of Israel was popularly believed to be standing. His presence would be left to human imagination. So it's very interesting what Sarna brings up here in regards to the mechanism of their reach for control. They're drawing from things that they knew, maybe from Egypt and from other cultures, and yet leaving room still to imagine that they're still with God. So I'm just fascinated by how we behave in times of deep uncertainty. Our leader is not around. What to do. And I think you're right, Matilda. As we start this study on Exodus 32, I welcome the listener to, if you're studying this with your own groups after, start from a place not of we're outside judging this community, but what does it look like for us? Maybe the initial question for all of us is, what do we do when we are experiencing anxiety over the lack of control? And I think as a society, as Americans, as world citizens right now, with the amount of things happening in the news today, think we're all there in the sense of what is the future? Is there a future? The insecurity is everywhere. So the crafting and the building of golden calves is always at our disposal today. Jody.
Yeah, no, I would just maybe repeat this phrase and then invite us to just sit with it. Come, let us make gods. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say part of the human condition, if you frame it in the sense of we have a need for predictability and safety and patterns, you know. So when we face uncertainty, chaos, crisis, things where we either can't control or we just have no idea what's going on, we often grasp for something that we can either control or predict or manage in mm-hmm. some way. I think it's so easy to dismiss them, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, they made an idol, and we picture some sort of shiny little thing, mm-hmm. you know, and we kind of make fun. We might draw on some of the satire, for instance, in Jeremiah chapter 10, where it's like, ha, 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 you know, you make this thing and you coat it with precious metals and then you talk to it and it can't talk back to you and you expect it to provide your needs, but it's nothing but material, you know?
Yeah.
It's easy to go there. And yet, if we just sit with this, come, let us make gods who will mm-hmm. go before us, right? Like, we need something.
Yeah.
And we need to yeah. make it happen. We all do this.
It's us.
Constantly.
And I'm reminded here, I think Matilda mentioned something in previous studies about idolatry and how we are created in the image of God. And then we substitute that for an idol. It mm-hmm. it deceives us. It mm-hmm. undoes our humanity. It dehumanizes us. But here in Exodus, we're not just building up the individual. The whole aim of Exodus is to build a people, a society, an Am, right? Mm-hmm. An Edah, right? This community of people with a single purpose. And I love how the language of the text conveys that when communally they reach for idolatry, that's when the whole thing that is starting to be put together throughout the book of Exodus becomes undone. This is in chapter 32, verse 25. Notice the language here. And when Moses saw that the people had broken loose, it's very interesting that that which was starting to come together now is actually broken loose. So what is Israel? What is God to do? What do you make of the language, though, here? God starts turning to Moses and says, take now your people. This is not me
your
anymore.
Problem.
Yeah, this is your problem now. What is God trying to do? I'm thinking of covenant. I'm thinking about that openness of God that we discussed in the beginning. But how do you make this dynamic? Is God being a teacher here? Is God being just plain angry here? I mean, what is happening?
Just to remind us again of the verb broken loose. Yes. It's the verb for the Pharaoh.
I love that.
The people took their liberty to become that kind of
yeah.
Pharaoh that is like out of control,
yeah.
doing whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Right?
Instead of
yeah.
God, they assimilate to the other. So it's interesting.
Yes.
That's very interesting, bringing Pharaoh back into that mode of control in times of insecurity.
So Moses is still on the mountain, and God tells him what happens down there.
Yep. What verse are you on?
Verse 10 and 11.
Okay.
God says, let my anger burn against them, and I may destroy them, and then make out of you a great nation. I want to say Moses here in this shines in this text. This is the chapter mm-hmm. and the section in Exodus where Moses becomes the intercessor
yeah.
for the people. And I think it is also the language and the way the mm-hmm. description is given is specific for that.
Yeah.
And so when you read verse 11, it says Moses was sick mm-hmm. before the Lord. He did not entreat the Lord. He was sick.
Mm.
He, like, felt sick.
Yeah.
It's body language mm-hmm. here. And then the Lord responds with that. Let my anger burn. The nose is, like, fuming. And when Moses then starts to try to, like, work with God here mm-hmm. and intercede, pleading with God, he's a real advocate, mm-hmm. a lawyer mm-hmm. for the people
yeah.
in the presence of God.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you know, God, what will the Egyptians say if you do that? Don't you know that you made a promise? You have to keep the promise. Moses uses commanding language, mm-hmm. imperative language here.
Toward God.
Yes, yeah. toward God.
Yep.
And so he has at least three or four main arguments that he presents like a full-on lawyer before the judge. And at the end, go to verse 14, the Lord, in my English Bible, says, changed his mind.
Relented.
How do you read that?
Relented on mine.
In you are relented. But the word that is used there, the Lord now feels sick.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He's with Moses.
They're both affected by.
Yes, yes, yes. The Lord is in pain in this passage. That's the verb nacham.
Yep.
This is the labor pain of God. Like when you give birth to a child, the Lord felt in pain about the harm that he would do to the people. And so he stops on that.
It's a powerful image, again, of the openness of God in the role of Moses, Matilda. And it makes me think about the nature of leadership, which is a conversation that can always be raised throughout the book of Exodus, right? The nature of leadership. I find that this advocate angle of Moses and the prophet, right? As a prophet, the prophet is the one who, in the presence of God, intercedes for the people, in the presence of the people, intercedes for God. You know, it's trying to hold these two things together, the people and God, as a bridge. The embodiment of love God above all things and your neighbor as yourself. It's this impossible task of a prophet. Here Moses is doing it. And how different is it from religious leadership, you know, in the last centuries, in the sense of we love to imagine ourselves leading like Moses when it's all about the giving of the law, right? Right. This is what God desires. This is what God wants. But this aspect of leadership, which is the heart that breaks, the heart that intercedes, the one who says, take me out and keep them. That's rare, right? To find something like that, to feel the pain that God is also feeling and to find communion with God precisely in the pain of the lack of communion, which is what God desires. I remember when I was pastoring in Santa Fe, I remember reading these texts and thinking about the nature of leadership. In the end, those who are not only leading but serving God will always carry a measure of that pain, of the desire for divine communion, for communion of God and others and us with others, to build that kind of a community and realize that even though we all need that community, what we find is people rejecting it. We'd rather be on our own or separate. So beautiful image and insight into the leadership of Moses here and how we should aspire to be like Moses, not only in law giving, but in the heart that breaks for the people, the sickness of Moses and God. My thanks go to my conversation partners, Matilda and Jody, our program engineer, Cord Bailey, and to all of you for listening. And for The Good Word, I am Chiagua Heiss.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.